So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Way.
I got two different ways if I don't make it in wrestling. I always got my teaching skills, but if it came down to one of them, it might just end up be wrestling because it was just the heart I have for wrestling.
I'd take that knowledge and go elsewhere with it. Either in Backyard Federation where I learned it, and I'm going to take it elsewhere to the WWF. That's where I'm going. That's my dream. That's my goal. My goal is to be the World Heavyweight Champion.
I would do just about anything to be a WWF superstar. As long as it wasn't seriously illegal or involved eating people.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you. Today's edition of Review Away brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink and hot chocolate? Mocha something?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. You press the... We have like a coffee machine. You press mocha and you put in the chocolate pack. And you put in a coffee pack of your choice.
Ooh.
But really, it just tastes like hot chocolate.
In a Fight Network mug, no less.
Yeah, and you're drinking a death sentence.
A death sentence?
Yeah.
Energy drinks are getting a bad rap of late. I'm just trying to reverse the stereotype by drinking this and not dying.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Yep. This is like this is the equivalent of a light bulb to the head. This is like the third stage of hell.
Yeah. Drink a whole energy drink.
I'm so excited about this review. I felt that last week you absolutely hit your flat line of reviews. You were so despondent. As we mentioned, we had to redo the ending because I think anyone who listened to it would be so depressed.
We didn't mention that.
I think we did. Oh, maybe we were talking about it to somebody else.
No, this is breaking news.
Well, last week's show ended with me. You're right, because we haven't done a podcast since... well, anyway, we ended it with me simply asking Wei, what do you want to review next week? And Wei was just... I thought he was actually going to retire from Review Away at the end of the show. That's how dead he was. And here I just felt all this guilt. I'm like, what is the pain I'm putting this other human being through? What am I doing to this person? And Wei, you were just, you're like, I don't care what we review. Maybe let's just take the week off. And we had to just stop. And then Wei was like, okay, let's just redo that. And we'll review something. But Wei, it's been 7 days later. Do you feel energized? Do you feel like George St. Pierre, who lost his love for fighting,
right,
but then has regained it? Or are you still...
No.
There's too much for you to watch every week.
First, let me say, last week was, especially difficult because we had so much going on the week prior. And, Survivor Series 97, not a boring show, really.
A redundant show. Is that fair to say?
Maybe.
I think everyone is sick of... I agree with you. I thought there would be more to come out of that. But, you know, what more can be said about this thing? Like, literally, like, a book has been written, essentially, by Dave Meltzer on this. Every fact imaginable, inside and out. Everyone knows what has happened. They've made up. They've moved on. It's 15 years later. It's the most talked about event of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
What are John Pollock and Wei Ting going to add to this event?
Yeah, I mean, it was that. Plus, I didn't feel like I had too much to add to the review, so I wasn't very happy about my performance. I wasn't very impressed.
I wasn't impressed with your performance.
Yes, and I don't know. I think I feel like a lot of these older shows are kind of harder to watch because usually they're not very relevant. And I've said it before where... Maybe there's one match of the show that I really care to see, but then to see that one match, you got to sit through 2 hours or 2.5 hours of meaningless things that, you know, nobody cares about. So that's what got to me. But this week was completely different. All hour and a half of this viewing was completely relevant.
The Backyard. This was a 2003 documentary. I had heard about this quite a lot. Ever since it had come out, it went to a number of different film festivals, won various awards, and was one that I had never got around to watching. And it was sitting in my trunk of my car.
You just keep all this wrestling stuff inside your trunk.
Well, a lot of it's prizes.
At all times.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have room in my house for it. Like, I live in a condo. I don't have room for it. My storage is full of tapes already and stuff. That's how packed my place is.
So John is traveling at all times with a prize pack. You're like Santa Claus.
Yeah, I'm not advertising this fact. I don't care to because I could get robbed.
If you're the type to rob a man's car for a wrestling DVD, good for you.
Then it's worth spending the $20 on said DVD at your local Kmart or something.
No, you deserve it if you're going to go through all that.
No.
If you're going to risk going to jail for the backyard? Okay.
I will charge you with disorderly conduct and public destruction if you were to try and steal a DVD from my car.
Well, you also have a spinner belt in there.
There is a toy spinner belt in there.
The toy spinner belt, yeah. Before you guys actually think about stealing from John's car. It's it's the kid's toy spinner belt.
I can't remember where we got that from. If it was sent to us, I think it was sent to us by something. But it's such an annoying thing to try and mail out as a prize. So we've just kind of held on to it. And I feel down the road we might need it for some kind of gimmick.
Perhaps, yeah, some type of prop. What would an actual car thief say if they stole your car and then found all this wrestling memorabilia in the trunk?
Oh, this fake shit. What am I going to do with this? IWA Mid-South tapes? Are you kidding me? So anyway, that's where I went into the trunk. And on our trip, I thought, well, me and Ware, I'm sure that one of the nights we're going to have nothing to do, and we can watch something and review it. So I brought along The Backyard, and I brought season one of XPW, another one that I was just going for, something ridiculous that me and Wei will definitely enjoy. And Wei chose The Backyard, and so I sat down to watch this week, not really knowing what to expect. I knew this was about backyard wrestling, but went in with pretty much a clean slate, zero expectations. And yet all of them were met. And let's kick off basically way with some of the characters involved in this. Basically, this director, Paul Huff, he went to all these different parts of the U.S. where backyard wrestling was prominent and featuring some of these small little backyard feds with crowds ranging from anywhere from 25 people to 3 people watching guys essentially mutilate one another. And this was done in the early 2000s. So this was, I would say, backyard wrestling at its height. Was during the wrestling boom period where backyard wrestling was popping up more and more. There was a big influence on trying to sell these tapes online. And with the explosion of the internet, there was a way for people to not only do this in your backyard and hopefully get some people to pay to watch it in your backyard, but also video record this kind of guerrilla style and then sell these tapes online for people that are into this. And it got a lot of attention as people were doing more wrestling stories. And this was a really kind of if you're a news outlet, this is a great story. It's visually insane, involving kids watching pro wrestling and now emulating it. It's an easy story.
Absolutely. I think this was also a time when, you know, you had things like Jackass really gain mainstream acceptance and popularity. And not to say that this ever, backyard wrestling ever gained any type of mainstream acceptance, but I certainly think the craving for this stupid type of shit was out there.
Now, were you ever a backyard wrestling fan?
Never.
Neither was I. Like, to be honest, I watched it the same way I watched this, where I was just like, ugh. To me, backyard wrestling always represented to me what I never wanted people to associate wrestling with when I would tell them that I watch pro wrestling or I cover pro wrestling. These are the images I don't want people to think of, because to me, it really makes me sound like an idiot that I cover this stuff and giant guys jumping through light tubes, bludgeoning each other.
To be fair, does it sound any better when you tell people what you do actually cover? Like storylines involving love triangles and shit like that?
I don't think it's as looked down upon in that sense. It's shitty storylines are one thing. Kids just destroying each other, I think, is another. Neither great. You're right. You bring up a great point, though, that to people that frown upon pro wrestling, this is not going to really sway their opinion one way or another. They're probably set in their ways. But I was never a big backyard wrestling fan. I was never someone who, if there was a video link of a, you know, guy goes through flaming table off roof, that I was ever really curious to click on. I never had a very big desire to see that kind of stuff.
I was never a big fan of Jackass either. I mean, I just, yeah, it's somewhat entertaining to watch, but I just couldn't help but think that it was really, I couldn't help but think about what these people were going to suffer through for a while. And I'm speaking as an MMA fan too. I mean, it's completely different.
I think it's also, there's a certain depressing mood to all of this, being that I watched this in 2012, you know, 8 years after the 9 years after this film came out, and it all has this common thread where, for the majority, all these guys that are killing themselves and doing all this stuff, they have dreams of one day being WWF superstars and being at the top of the business. And A, you know full well right now, even more so than when you watch this, that that is not going to happen for any of these guys. And B, this is like the blueprint of how not to get recognized. Like, you send in one of these tapes, not only are they throwing the tape out, but mentally they will know that they will never look at someone like this. And people can always point to Mick Foley, who I always refer to more as like the exception to the rule, along with like the Hardys, as guys that were, that did backyard stuff, that do get associated with that. But in the case of Mick Foley, to me, it was never just that this guy was a crazed stuntman that got him to where he was. He became an engaging character, a phenomenal promo, and yes, he was one that got through, but to me, it's, I don't know, I just, WWE, I can tell you, complete fact, they don't even look at this stuff. Like, yeah. They just, this is the ultimate negative if you're trying to get into the company and painting yourself as a backyard wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, on the one hand, what this documentary made me kind of realize was that all these after-school specials, and anytime, you know, you hear a lot of people, exceptional people, people who are very accomplished, you hear them tell kids, if you believe, you can achieve. You know, like all that stuff, saying if you just work hard enough, you can do it. And this is the same philosophy that a lot of these idiots possess. That if they believe that they can be a WWF champion, they can do it. Watch me. I don't care what you all say. I'm going to break this over my head, and I'm going to be successful doing it. I'm going to get there. And that's so not true. So I just, if there's something to take away from my viewing of this, it's just, don't give that lesson to anybody, especially if they're an idiot.
Now, Wei, you are actually a veteran of the backyard scene with the infamous SMC. So tell us, you're watching this as a first-hand contributor to this scene. Now, you are not doing, at least to the best of my knowledge, you only did basically staged attacks on women, but never anything involving fire or cheese graters. Can you tell us, for new listeners, a little bit about the SMC and roughly how old you were when this was going down and who was involved? Come on.
The SMC, Supreme Master Championship. We were a, well, let's edit this out. Let's redo this.
No more editing. You got your one edit last week.
This was an organization. My friend Jeff and I had just gone to WrestleMania 18 in,
so right around the same time as
yeah,
this.
And that would have made us 18 years old.
18.
Full grown men, adults at this point. And,
I didn't consider myself a full grown man at 18.
My friend Jeff is a very proactive person. If he gives an interest, he'll likely do it. He
believe, achieve.
Yes. No matter how stupid the idea. And so he, decided to one day just ask all his friends together to start a wrestling organization. And he did his first show at his friend's birthday party, and, he dressed up as Hogan. I won't tell you what the name he actually used was. It's very offensive. And so he eventually asked me if I wanted to join as a storyline writer. And I came on board as a booker and a storyline writer and the announcer. And it was really stupid. It was not anything physical whatsoever. If you saw a tape of this, John, you would just...
Do tapes exist?
They do exist, yes. But nobody will ever see them.
Not even me?
No, probably not. Anyway.
How many shows did you guys do?
Did like five.
Five shows?
Yeah. And we went all out. Like
Where did you do this?
In the park.
In the park.
Public park? In the public park.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You guys didn't get arrested.
We didn't get arrested like these people for
disorderly conduct and destruction of property.
There was no destruction taking place whatsoever. What we did was we would find, ever so often you would see people throw out their old mattresses on the side of the road. And so, my friend and I would like see these, and we'd get all excited. Hey, we saw there's a mattress at Truro Crescent. Let's go grab it. And wow. So there would be like the three of us just hauling this giant mattress to one of our houses and then eventually to the park. And you know the like soccer posts?
Yeah.
We would just take basically duct tape and tape ropes up by the soccer posts, and we would put like maybe two bikes on the other two posts, and we would just tape all around that, and that'd be the ring.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And
If I went to your high school way, I totally would have, I easily would have become friends with you over this.
Oh, I'm sure we would.
I totally would have wanted in on this at 18.
You would have been a star character, I imagine, because I mean, you being as big of a wrestling fan as you were, you would probably have had the most technique out of all those guys. But like my friends, all of his buddies, mostly they were very soft, just not very dangerous people. So, and like they were not
like
violent.
Shitty work punches and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
They were not violent and whatsoever. In fact, there was this one kid who actually was maybe a bit more violent and fit the mold of this backyard wrestler a bit more. We eventually brought him on, and he almost injured a bunch of people, and it was no good. We were basically the shittiest, most easygoing wrestling imaginable. More easygoing than a bunch of Kelly Kellys. So that
everyone's
was
the world champion. With a ribbon that you give out at the end.
Sure, why not?
So
that's SMC.
So the tapes exist, is what you're saying. That's our big takeaway.
Sure.
I never was involved with wrestling, though there was a time when I worked at the infamous movie theater, and all my friends were, like, big into wrestling. And occasionally we would, like, there was, like, this area that we got, like, the employees' lounge area with these couches. And we'd move them around and we'd do spots on one another. And
at your workplace.
Yeah, at the workplace, no less. And I remember one time that one of our managers was in there and he didn't really care. But what I did was we had set up a cushion. And I ran across the room and did a fucking somersault over top of a chair and then was going to land on the cushion. But at the last second, the manager kicked this steel garbage can in my way, and I basically in midair positioned myself so I landed next to the garbage can rather than right into it. And right at that moment, I was like, fuck this shit. I am never doing this stuff again because this guy could have killed me.
That was enough.
I was a safe worker at that point, yeah. And I was done.
You weren't. You didn't have an abusive upbringing, I take it.
No, not really.
Okay, so you didn't feel the need to use pain as your friend.
Imagine like wrestlers that like. No, this is a stupid conversation. Let's move on.
Yeah. We'll move on to the documentary.
Yeah, we do have to talk about this. But I felt, wait, we need to preface it with the SMC. If ever there was a review to talk about the SMC,
categorize SMC as backyard wrestling is an insult to backyard wrestling,
what about,
quite frankly.
If we make it to, like, a very monumental episode number or anniversary?
Sure. Episode
could we review
2000,
the SMC?
2,851.
2,851.
Yeah,
right after Bruno's title reign is broken?
Exactly.
Oh, way. SMC, that could be our biggest review ever. That would beat the China porn.
Oh, God. I don't think so.
I would give you my Visa number and forget to cancel it for 2 months.
Hey, how about an episode of Jaws? Was that, is that
if
up
you,
for a review?
If you were, no, If you are willing to, for us to review SMC, I would definitely consider letting us review an episode of Jaws, though I would be absolutely horrified to listen to it.
John's Audio Wrestling, your first wrestling.
This was like 1999, 2000 era. It would be absolutely atrocious.
As a 15-year-old, I would love to hear
it. I didn't even like listening to myself on the radio. Like,
did this actually get broadcast? Years.
This was on the internet, and that was it. It's like you had to have a real player plug in to listen to it.
Jaws. Love it. I love the name.
And it was my buddy who did the show with me that came up with the name. I was not this vain person that wanted my name in it.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Jaws.
All right. The Backyard. I guess...
it's like Japanese audio wrestling. We got
Jaws. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But yours is John's Audio Wrestling Show.
Yes.
There's an S there.
Yep. So we start off with the Lizard is our first character that we are introduced to, and
he's the main character, I'd say, in this whole thing.
And he talks to us right off the start, way in much of the Believe Achieve motto. He talks about he one day wants to he has excellent knowledge and determination, and his goal one day is to beat Chris Benoit and to be Chris Jericho. And lists off a bunch of names.
You can clearly see why this guy got the name The Lizard, because he looks just like one. Yes. He's got like the gecko in the gecko ads, Geico, the Geico gecko. Yes. He looks just like that. He's got a mouth like that.
And he was one of the main characters throughout this entire documentary. And they also somehow got this random interview with Rob Van Dam at his home that they would... This looked like a 20-minute interview that they just... spliced here and there throughout the entire documentary.
Yeah, we should also thank one of our listeners, Jeff Seltzer, who forwarded us an interview he did with the director Paul Hoth many years ago, and he actually asked him how he got into contact with Rob Van Dam, and apparently Rob was just in town for he was probably would have been in the WWF by this time, and he was just in town shooting something and got a hookup for this quick interview.
So pretty much Van Damme is just used at the beginning and the end, and then there's a longer version of his interview where, with more clips in the extras of the DVD that I did watch. Nothing groundbreaking. Anyway, we then meet Justin and Bo, who are two brothers that live out in the desert, and they run shows. And
they run shows, yes. Shows.
Can we call them shows?
I don't know.
How many people do you need to draw to be considered a show?
Well, considering this crowd, three.
Three.
Three is a healthy crowd.
We also met, Justin says his whole life is about wrestling, and we meet his daughter, Jessica, who one day wants to be like China.
Oh, man. Well,
talk about poor role models.
Yeah, I should probably change that life goal by this point.
We got this awesome, like, staged discussion with Justin and Bo.
Oh, this didn't
talking
seem,
to Nana.
This didn't seem staged at all.
Yes, it did.
I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say Nana's reaction was at all staged.
Well,
this was basically two backyard wrestlers who just they just do basically what you. Let's talk about this match. The three stages of hell. That they concocted.
Yeah, where do we have how...
Okay, first...
You described these three. I don't think I wrote down...
This is similar to, I guess, like, didn't Austin and Triple H do this? Didn't they call it the same thing?
Yeah, three Austin stages. And Triple H did a match like this. Hunter and Shawn Michaels did one of these.
Well, they certainly didn't do it to this extreme. The first part of the match, you have to... I guess you have to send your opponent through barbed wire... boards or something like that. Second stage, you
it
have
was a
to...
buried alive match. That's the second fall.
Wait, okay, the second... Okay. Wait a second. Don't you get buried alive at the end?
No, they explain the second fall. I remember that part, where the second part is you kill them, and then they come back for the third fall. Now... Don't remember this, folks. Yes, you've watched Buried Alive matches in the WWF where it's gimmicked. These guys... These guys legitimately buried their...
They dug a hole in the ground in the desert here. And then...
They really bury each other alive.
Oh, man.
In front of three people.
Jesus Christ, this is like the stupidest concept I've ever heard of.
We're not even at the third stage yet.
We're not even 5 minutes into this documentary.
The third stage is you, I guess they climb back out of the hole that they were just buried alive in, and there is a flaming barbed wire table.
Yeah, with I think light bulbs at the bottom of, of the grave.
You can't forget the light bulbs.
Because taking a razor's edge through a table, a flaming table with barbed wire, just isn't enough until you have light bulbs to cushion your fall.
So just imagine us describing all this to Nana. Nana, who is just sitting here with the most shocked expression on her face, hearing that her grandsons are doing this on their weekend.
Said that we've been wrestling. And he describes all of the matches. And Nana's like, is that why you came home bleeding? I thought this was all fake. This doesn't sound fake.
She was just horrified. Like, what? You know, this woman probably born, in the 1930s. Like, for the first time in her entire life, hearing about the existence of something this ridiculous. Like, what? She's just sitting there like, what are you infecting my world with here, grandson?
Well, then we met Mom. Justin and Beau's mother, who might have been the most interesting character of the whole bunch here, who is fully supportive of her sons fulfilling their dreams. And this woman helps them put together the barbed wire boards. She is a character within the storylines because they shoot angles. And God knows where these videos went. I have no idea. But
oh, come on. Pro wrestling, you got to have angles. That's you got to have backstage vignettes.
And Justin, I think this was Justin, they're like twins, is producing a promo with Mother, cutting a promo while she is looking evil and petting a black cat.
Haven't you had enough yet?
No. Get into the evil. You're mad. You're angry, you know. But it's all into a happy anger, you know.
Right.
You'll truly know the beatings have just begun.
You will truly know the beatings you have just begun.
The beatings have just begun.
The beatings just have begun.
The beatings have just begun.
The beatings have just begun.
You want your head down, Mom. You want it down like you're looking at him. The cat, nothing but just like that.
Bang, bang, bang. Haven't you had enough yet? I guess you haven't. The beating that Bravis is about to give you will be far more than I could ever do. When the blood is dripping from your face and the shivers going down your spine, you will know the beatings have just begun.
This is so weird.
The beatings have just begun.
Yeah, the mom played this evil mom character, and it was shot all right, actually, for a low-budget production. Like, all the lighting and the framing was
this was
good.
The extra effort for a backyard fed. Camcorder without a tripod.
Yeah, that's that. You gotta get your money. Come on, the tripod, at least $100, even for a cheap one. If you gotta save that money for the spools of barbed wire.
They showed some highlights here of the first three stages of Hell Match with a crowd of zero, and we just saw home videos of them going through tables.
But even before that, you had this was the second match, I believe. They had done three stages of Hell
Match. Wasn't the second one coming up? Isn't that what they were building to?
Well, you could be right. But anyway, before this, there was a scene where the mom was in the ER waiting for her son to come out after having this match. And the mom's not really concerned here. The mom just says, boy, I hope that match turned out great. I can't wait to watch it.
How was the match? The mother had this look on her face. She was so excited for the second three stages of Hell Match, where her two sons were going to murder one another. She was so excited here.
And you know what? You have to give... whenever you watch any type of edited thing, you have to take into account how much of this could be edited. Was this mom made to look, you know, much more negligible than she actually was?
Like any documentary... To me, it's the subject matter is completely irrelevant. It's the people you find. I could watch a phenomenal documentary about painting walls, and if it's a great character that you have describing his vocation to paint walls,
yeah,
it's going to be a great documentary. And this documentary found some of the most insane characters ever, and this mother to me was at the top of the list. She, they then show her as they are performing their next match. First of all, one of them, the influence of Mick Foley is just staggering, right down to his grunting selling that's right out of Mick Foley.
Yeah.
As we watch five people sitting on lawn chairs watching this, and then do you want to describe the mother's heel turn?
Well,
where she can't keep a straight face and laughs as she...
Mom, first of all, is a... The storyline is that they base this a little bit on real life in that one of the brothers was beaten by a parent. And so here, they were... The storyline was that Mom had beaten this brother all his life, and now it was time for the brother to get revenge on his mom and his other brother. So this whole time, Mom is protecting one brother. Don't, enough, that's enough. You've hurt him enough. And all of a sudden, Mom takes the chair away from the other son and attacks the son that she's aligned with.
The Russo turn.
A swerve.
And they later explain that this whole storyline was based on their father, who was abusive to them, and they have put the mother now in the role as the abusive parent.
Yes, yes.
And the son that was abused was finally getting his revenge.
Yeah, that was at the end of the match. And you know what? That was actually a very deep and poignant portion of the documentary.
I don't think deep and poignant are possible in the Nevada desert here.
Hold on. You do understand, though, part of the psyche of these people, and it makes sense when you think about it. This, the way we're getting ahead of the documentary, but we'll talk. Might as well talk about it here. And what this kid, how this kid justifies doing all this is because he was beaten by his father as a child, and so growing up, pain was always a part of his life. So he decided to, why not make that pain something that he could use to be creative, to be his friend, and thus these matches, this three stages of hell.
They did find a number of different characters within this documentary that just had terrible childhoods coming up, and they found their outlet in backyard wrestling.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there a link there?
I don't know. Maybe. Also, I just want to make mention of this. Bo's girlfriend was shooting the three stages of hell, and she is watching her boyfriend get destroyed here and take this horrible bump with this razor's edge through the flaming table with barbed wire, and he lands badly and fucks up his head. And she is visibly shaking and crying as she is recording this.
Yeah.
And
this was brilliantly edited, by the way.
And then they show her coming to hug him afterwards, just completely distraught over seeing this guy punish himself. And has there ever been a more romantic moment in a wrestling documentary than this girlfriend telling Bo, with tears coming out of her eyes,
she's horrified,
"You juiced beautifully. It was awesome."
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's when a man has found his soulmate.
You know what?
You juiced beautifully.
Honestly, it's so crazy, but you know what? That, yeah, that's true love.
This was
right
such
there.
An emotional moment. The most emotional I've ever felt after watching a death match in a desert.
You know, clearly, these people see this not the way that we see it. They see it as you know, this is a truly important artistic endeavor that they're taking part in, and it means a lot to them in their lives.
So that is our introduction to
this was only like 10 minutes in.
Yeah, this was just the first kind of, for lack of a better term, territory that we visited. We then move over to the next territory, and this is where we meet the Lizard, along with such characters as Bongo the Pot Smoking Monster, Wild Hamburger, ADD Dave, and, of course, the Lizard, as I mentioned, who cuts this big promo on having heart and being hardcore. And if you're not hardcore, get out of the business.
Yeah, that's right.
And Lizard, none of these guys are professionally trained in any sense of the word.
Jesus, like, you can't even call these punches. Like, they're not even moves. But most of the time, they're just throwing each other into shit.
Lizard is like, he's like the ultimate indie geek that just does stuff he's seen on television, right down to Rob Van Dam's thumb pose.
Yeah.
And then climbs to the top of a turnbuckle with some dude on a table on the floor. But before he can perform his swanton, he takes his shirt off, revealing a man that I guarantee you is not on anything performance-enhancing related, does the Hardy pose, and thus a swanton.
Through the table on the outside.
I was sold on this documentary here at the 12-minute mark. This was just great. And Lizard is considered one of the oldest backyarders at the ripe old age of 26, and he performs for the very well-respected Backyard Fed, the Modesto Championship Wrestling Organization. And Lizard just got a last-minute booking with MCW, which altered his plans for the evening of going to the movie theater to watch The Rock's new movie. But now he's got to go work for MCW.
This guy,
what a dilemma.
Just the biggest mark in the world.
This guy Jesus was great. Christ. These are the kind of guys you pray for if you're putting a documentary together.
Yeah.
We have competition on the way. There are four different companies planning to get on the air soon. And from what I hear, they will all make it on the air because there are plenty of time slots open. I don't want us to become the WCW of backyard wrestling. From now on, you will only be able to miss one show a month. Only one. This is where it all starts. Every independent wrestler that I've talked to have said, I started in the backyard. It starts in the backyard. Your dedication starts in the backyard. If you want to go places and do things, show me you want to go places and do things. Within the next few weeks, all of you guys will be required to sign waivers. Your parents, if you're under 18, your parents will be required to sign the waiver as well. Because I don't want to put myself in danger.
The Modesto Championship Wrestling, another backyard fed.
Run by the Vince McMahon of backyard wrestling, Josh James, my favorite character in this whole documentary.
But, you know, this, and I suppose many backyard feds like it at the time. I didn't know this, but this Modesto Championship Wrestling, they had cable access TV.
These guys were legit,
and they were
in the backyard world.
They were involved in a mini territorial regional cable TV
war. The cable access wars.
Yeah. Because this guy,
the Saturday at 3 a.m. wars.
Josh James, the Vince McMahon of backyard wrestling, he's starting to get very concerned here that many other backyard feds around this community are vying for TV spots because there's so much TV time on cable access. Everybody's going to get it. And so none of you guys can miss a date. From now on, you can only miss one date a month.
He cuts this promo on one guy who didn't check his pager when he was to be booked, just dating this documentary. The line of the fucking show of this entire movie was Josh James, as Wei was mentioning, lecturing the entire locker room, that being like eight guys.
No, there was no locker room. They're on the
feet. Sorry.
They're on somebody's lawn.
The lawn. I do not want us to become the WCW of backyard wrestling. I do not want us to become the WCW of backyard wrestling.
In Modesto, California.
This was so good. My biggest complaint of this documentary was not enough of this guy, Josh James. He was so awesome.
There was a lot of him, and what shocked me the most was when he said, you should have your pager on. How are you going to know that it's me? Just the number 17, my age. And the number 911, which means emergency. That's how you would know. This guy's 17 years old.
This guy looked not a day under 38.
Yeah.
17.
Running his own backyard fed.
Amazing. This guy was our age in like 2001. This one woman will not sign a waiver for her son because he has a bump on his head. And if he lands on that bump, he'll die instantly.
He was smart enough to have waivers. The way he explained these waivers was not...
It's like Joseph Park signing a hold harmless agreement for Hogan.
The way he explained these waivers to his talent was just not... he didn't try
I'll make sure
it.
You guys are okay, but if it's anything serious, I'm not doing anything.
I'm going to make sure that, you know, some paramedics will show up, but if you need hospital bills, I'm not liable. I'm not paying for that shit.
So you think this mother is all concerned about her son's health. She then cuts a promo on her son saying, If you land on your neck and are paralyzed, it ain't gonna be me wiping your ass if you get paralyzed. And you've already got a kid on the way. This kid looked like he was 12. This was just unbelievable.
It's just such a... I feel like us up here in Toronto, we're just so removed from people like this. And maybe I'm just ignorant, but to just see people function like this, it was amazing. This is what the reality shows are made of.
Then we were introduced to two of their young up-and-comers, two 10-year-olds named Insane and the Destroyer. These kids couldn't have been more than 10. I might be generous here. They could have been 7. Working matches, and one of them is also a referee.
Uh-huh. And what...
Children.
Take us through the match, John.
I can't even remember the match here. They actually put their full match on one of the extras, and I watched it, and it ended with a stunner as Josh James is calling their spots from ringside, and he yelled, "Kick out! Kick out!" And the guy didn't kick out after the stunner.
Oh, was this the same kid that got thrown through the table and then started screaming for his mommy?
No, that was somebody else.
Okay.
We ended this segment of the documentary off with Lizard at his home, showing us all his wrestling merchandise, his figures, and then his grand prize, his replica title, that he informs us, "This isn't the real title. I bought it, but I want to earn it."
Right.
Dreams, Sway.
Yep.
Dreams.
Just the, this guy.
It's like you need the cranberries here to play underneath his dream. So then we go over to the next territory. This was the HIW. Did you catch what this stood for? Hardcore Insanity Wrestling, I'm going to guess. And I'm probably right. This is where we met the King of Hurt, Scar.
This kid scared me. This was like the kid. If I had kids and this kid went to that school, I'd probably take my kids out.
This guy was
fucked up.
Well... He first talked to us, and his voice was completely messed up. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy has, like, trachea.
Oh, sorry, not Scar.
Oh, no, you're thinking of Chaos.
Chaos.
Who's just fucked. Scar, meanwhile, like, he's this guy who will do any bump imaginable. So when we first hear from him, his voice is all messed up. And I'm like, this guy has, like, got... like larynx issues and stuff from bumps. But then we understand that he was born with all these liver problems and his hearing was all messed up. And he's actually deaf. So that was why his voice was off.
These bumps, man. Okay.
This is where...
This is them buying...
Mousetraps.
Well, first of all, they show Rob Van Dam before this. And the scene that Rob Van Dam is shown in, he talks about, you know, backyard wrestling, it's great to be creative... and it's sometimes scary to think what kids would do without backyard wrestling. And then they basically juxtapose that by showing this guy Scar going to buy rat traps at the dollar store to use in his match.
And ranting about how the big promotions use rubber-tipped barbed wire. Ours is real, and we don't give a fuck. It's like going downtown and gay bashing.
Okay, that was Chaos.
That was Chaos.
Yeah.
Who is... the least likable of anyone on this entire documentary.
Yeah.
Chaos talks about injuries and getting fucked up. And then he shows us some of his objects, including these cookie sheets with flowers that he calls gay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Somehow in all this, they showed us, they lit a guy on fire. They poured like kerosene on him and he caught fire.
This wasn't like, I guess like that Vampiro or like any Inferno match that you've ever seen. This was them literally having their friend stay in one spot, another friend dousing him with kerosene and then just throwing a match onto him and lighting him on fire. This was like that monk in the Tibetan monk, you know, on the Rage Against the Machine, album cover. This is just like that. I didn't know what I was watching. I couldn't believe there was footage of this.
They showed...
a child on fire.
This is fucked. They show there was a guy named Heartless, who was an elementary school teacher, who said if he had to pick one or the other, he would lean towards wrestling.
Oh, God. Idiots.
There was a girl here who was also part of the promotion. And then Scar's parents are interviewed. And they show all of his scars from all his liver problems as a child. He had this bloated stomach from his liver problems as a child. Lost his hearing. And his parents justify him doing backyard wrestling because as a child, they made all the decisions for him, all the surgeries he had to go through, that finally, this is a decision that he's able to make. The life he fought so hard to have as a child, they are going to allow him to make the decision to put it in jeopardy by backyard wrestling.
Yeah.
Kids will be kids. And Scar, they explain, is quite the entrepreneur, starting his own backyard fed, Strictly Extreme Wrestling. Strictly Extreme.
Strictly Extreme Wrestling.
S-E-W. They don't toe the line. They are strictly extreme.
You do have to give credit to the filmmaker here for he, you know, in showing these justifications from these parents, he doesn't really chastise them in any way. He just basically says what they say. And
to be honest, I like the fact the director didn't insert any opinion. Yep. Or this is it. This is what these people are, and you be the judge.
And you can choose to accept it or not accept it. Do you think these parents are actually justified in letting their son, you know, do this, or do you not think so? And I think it presented clear cases.
And then this sequence built up to a dream match among the backyard community. Scar and the retarded butcher.
Nah, I've been waiting for this
so
all year.
These guys had this concept that they were going to perform this dream match without video, and they were going to write the play-by-play on a website.
And why? Why would that be?
Way, I have no idea. I have no idea why two men would brutalize one another for real and then write it online rather than the other way around and skip the bludgeoning and the pain involved in writing up something pointless. So the only camera that was there was Paul Huff. And for whatever reason, they brought the mother of the retarded butcher along, who watched these two kill each other while crying and then started ruining their spots for them by throwing light tubes away, knocking the table over.
Don't say it like that. She didn't ruin the spots. She
was trying to prevent the spots.
Saved them. She saved this idiocy from occurring.
This mother was...
I felt so bad for her.
I did too.
Jesus,
it was like
Christ.
She was forced to watch her child try to kill himself.
The show is over. No more. That's it. No more. That's it. This is your last wrestling match. No more. And parents who see their sons interested in backyard wrestling, stop them when they first show an interest. Stop them. Don't allow them to continue, because it just goes on and on and on. And all they're doing is damaging themselves, hurting themselves. Why? I don't know. Maybe they have psychological problems, and they don't stop until one of them is probably going to be dead.
And like, it's like, what is she supposed to do? She's like watching all this, and all of a sudden she's thinking, this is what my son's been doing? What type of a parent am I? I thought I was a good mother. This is what my kids are doing. Like, she's just there crying, watching these kids do this to each other. And she's like, I wonder what's just stopping her from stepping in right away. Because, oh, man, this was kind of hard to watch. Just this mom. And they mic her. She was just crying the whole time.
It was like nails against the chalkboard with this woman crying. It was just so uncomfortable.
Then the thumbtacks.
Not the thumbtacks!
They throw thumbtacks to the ground. Yeah. And she's just completely broken by this point.
Fuck. Then we got the opposite, where they go to upstate New York, where there's some amateur wrestlers that backyard wrestle. And the entire community embraces this backyard federation. Everyone gets together for these. And this is the one and only backyard fed that has pyro.
Yes.
Fireworks.
And you know what? To be fair, this was not near the level of stupidity of
well,
the other
guy didn't.
Groups.
A guy did get his head split open. And was he? Was this also not the where the guy almost broke his neck when he took that like guillotine leg drop?
I don't know. I don't know. But they if, this was a community that initially embraced just, I think, really, you know, very tame backyard wrestling. But then at some point, even the kids started to buy into the hardcore craze, and they started to bring in flaming shit. Just flaming shit. And like, when I say flaming shit, they're not even, like, working them into creative spots. They're just like, all right, now we're going to punch each other. Now it's time for the flaming spot. Let's pause the match. Okay, you're going to light this paper plate on fire, and I'm going to flick it at you. All right, that's hardcore.
Well, when this one dude got his head split open, they take him home, and the two parents decide that he doesn't need to go to the hospital. And what's the point? The hospital will be way too busy on Saturday night anyway. Thank you. Mother and father of the year here. Then we go back with Justin Gates and the Lizard, who are both trying out for Tough Enough 2. So this would have been in either late 2001, early 2002, where they did the open video auditions where you could send your video in, and 250 of them got invited to Las Vegas for a formal audition. Justin, the veteran of the Stages of Hell, does not get invited, but the Lizard does get invited. And sadly, you watch this guy's tryout video, and you know the only reason he was accepted was to be the joke candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, he did get put into the episode, the debut episode where they just do all the auditions, because he played the Lizard, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that right?
Because I could have sworn the Lizard was one they made fun of on that show.
Yep.
But the Lizard, this was his moment. This was his breakthrough.
He thought this was his dream coming true.
And the Lizard, he gets accepted with the goofiest promo here, goes to Vegas, sleeps in his WCW sleeping bag in his car, and then checks into a hotel to wake up at 3 a.m. so that he is the first in line for his audition. And he was first in line.
He was.
That's great. And his real name, Andrew Cook, goes, has his audition. Of course, they can't show this on this documentary. And they have to wait, and he has to wait 24 hours to find out if he makes the top 25 to get invited back. He didn't make it, Way.
He didn't make it. And thus, his journey doesn't end. It's just
a big
bump
in the road. Then we go over to England, where they show a bunch of kids who have caught on to the backyard craze. We meet Adam Yarko, who blades here after a sit-out powerbomb, to which one of his buddies says, "You got a blood mustache."
These kids claim to be much more technical than their American counterparts. And you can actually see some sequences of them actually working some, you know, sunset flips and whatnot. But nonetheless, these kids didn't have a ring. They were doing power bombs
on the ground.
Death Valley drivers on the dirt. Just the plain hard ground here.
Yeah, the English crew here, they go home, they make tea, and then they watch for video captures for the internet. They go over their day's work. And they explain how their routine is to watch Raw at Ross's house. They make some comments. They make fun of Austin. They make a night of it. Yeah. That is their wrestling.
It was really hard to see these kids just bleed so much, because it was really uncomfortable, because these kids would keep wiping the blood off at the end of the match, but the blood just wouldn't stop. So, Jesus Christ.
We checked in back with Chaos, who was with another guy in his washroom. And I guess either a girlfriend or something is with them. And she gives us her testimonial about how tough these guys are, saying, "Them saying they're afraid is like me saying I want to be black. It ain't true."
Yeah.
Lovely. Really, really painting this this group with the most positive of...
What does that mean?
It means if they were to say they were afraid, it would be as ridiculous a statement, them saying they're afraid, as this woman would be saying that I want to be black.
Yeah.
They're untrue statements.
Right.
So, nothing like a little racism to...
It's not... I didn't think
that's that. Extremely racist.
Why? Why is that racist?
Saying that way, she is saying the idea, if they were to say I'm afraid of something,
yeah,
it's such a lie. It's completely against their character.
Yeah.
It's akin to someone like herself saying, I wish I was a black person. That's extremely...
No,
you are,
no she didn't say, I wish I was a black person. She said, she's just saying that...
That's like me saying, I want to be black. That's where her... Those are
no,
her.
She didn't say, I want to be black. She said, that's akin to me saying, I'm black, I think is what she said. Meaning that...
I'm pretty sure she said, I want
to
be black.
Oh, well, I mean, either way, I took it to mean, like, basically her saying that she... Basically something that's not possible. And not negative or positive.
Let's play the clip to get this corrected. You don't want to paint her as a racist if she's not.
Now, if you're really bleeding, you're going to really feel it. Because there's a big fucking...
Run.
Yeah, it's dripping everywhere and it sucks.
Them being scared of something is like me saying I want to be black. It ain't true.
Well, you be the judge.
There you go. Oh, then the Lizard, post Tough Enough, had a big career dilemma. The Extreme Renegade Wrestling promotion, under Justin Stark, who is the chairman of XRW, wants to bring in the Lizard, but wants to repackage him under a new gimmick as the Golden Dragon.
The Golden Dragon. What is a Golden Dragon?
I don't know, Wei. Do you remember?
I don't know. Maybe I'll look it up.
Look it up. So, the Lizard here is... very worried here. He discusses to us about how he's being put in the ring with a shooter. And he's worried about getting roughed up or even double-crossed. The best part is that all these fears that he is letting us know about, he is doing so as he is eating fries at McDonald's, sitting down at a table.
It's the diet of the backyard wrestler, I guess.
So he says, I do have an out where I can make up a knee injury that I have from playing basketball. And that is, in fact, what he does, and he backs out from his booking.
So he shows some restraint, you know, despite...
He's not going to get into the ring with someone he can't trust.
No.
Because that's what wrestling is about, is trust, he said. So then we go back for the closing of this documentary, all building up to Three Stages of Hell 2. And the mother, in the thick of all this, and this is where they explain the abusive father. And for 6 months... afterwards, they have a match involving a flaming table at a local park, and the two brothers, Justin and Bo, get arrested for disorderly conduct, destruction of property, and they spend 12 months in jail. And this is pretty much just your update on all the key characters here.
They spent a year in jail for having a match?
No. It was 6 months later that they spent 12 hours in jail.
Oh, 12 hours?
Yeah, they paid a fine. They didn't spend any significant time.
Not 12 months.
Scar, now dating a woman who will not allow him to wrestle anymore. So Scar has retired.
Yes.
Lizard goes to a wrestling school and made his debut on March 29th of 2002 for Supreme Pro Wrestling in a gauntlet match, and afterwards calls himself Mr. Pay-Per-View.
Yeah, he took a vertebraker in his first match.
And why not? Why not, Wei?
Well, it's nice to know he's in safe hands.
And then it closes with a montage of bumps and closing comments from Rob Van Dam, who says that backyard wrestling has nothing to do with wrestling. And they go to Chaos, who says, if you don't like us, then fuck off, because we're going to be here forever. And they did this weird editing of all the big bumps, but like pressing rewind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like backwards.
Yeah.
Strange. And the final comment.
Just a thing.
The final comment that summed up the mentality of all of these backyarders was Bo saying he would do anything to be in the WWE as long as it wasn't highly illegal or involved eating people. Other than that, it's open season to get into the WWE.
Oh, man.
What a documentary. The Backyard.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this.
I really liked this, too. This was one of the more entertaining wrestling documentaries.
I was engaged the entire time watching this thing.
Yeah, I thought it was put together very well. I didn't think it was I didn't think it was too preachy. But you know, how could you not look down on these people from watching this? But I thought it also it also made good cases for why these people did what they did.
It would be interesting to hear all of these people like 10 years later. Now, apparently,
on the DVD, there's a director's or there's commentary from
with the lizard,
and
Scar.
Scar, yes. Yeah, I'd love to listen to that.
So I do have the DVD. Way you can borrow it,
okay,
and watch it.
What do they? Oh, you haven't listened to it yet.
No, that would require watching the whole thing over.
But this is a definite gem out there for that. I don't think many wrestling fans are even aware of.
So. I recommend it. I certainly recommend it. I give this one an 8.5 out of 10.
I give it 8 out of 10. You can find this on Netflix. You can find this on iTunes. I'm not sure if you could do that in Canada, but definitely in the U.S. Netflix and iTunes, you can find this documentary.
All right. So that was our thoughts on The Backyard, and some limited feedback here, but we did get some. So we go to Rick from Ottawa, who writes, The Backyard was an interesting documentary on how bad things get and how stupid people are. This in no way is wrestling. It's more of a bunch of idiot morons who think they know what it's like to wrestle. That RVD is behind the wannabes and encourages backyard wrestling would seem to me to be quite silly as well. How many kids can and will get hurt? Just watch this movie and find out. The fat man who brings his mom to watch him wrestle in a park with light tubes just for kicks, because there is certainly no audience, is the so-called promoter who tells folks they are suspended and are serious about it, made me laugh my ass off. These folks need a real life.
I'd like to know what Rob Van Dam thinks of this documentary, having seen. I mean, because clearly I doubt that he'd known what type of footage Paul and his cinematographer had shot prior to.
And
all
what
this.
What footage his comments would be over with. But in that interview that Jeff sent us, Paul, the director, says RVD watched it. He loved the movie.
Okay, interesting. We go to Brandon James, who says, I watched this last year while searching for docs. A decent movie, and it really shows what these guys are willing to do for, like, $10. Even the mothers had a big part in this, supporting their sons. All in all, I can't wait to listen.
We go to Shane Silver. I remember picking this up for a few quid about 6 years ago. The DVD cover said it rivaled Beyond the Mat. In some cases, it did. It was much funnier than Beyond the Mat, although not on purpose. Case in point, I recall the scene about the kid who is apparently the Vince McMahon of backyard wrestling. The fact that this was stated without any sense of sarcasm, humor, or irony was fantastic. I can just imagine this kid buying out all the backyard competition with a few bags of candy, some cigarettes, and a Best of Disturbed mixtape. This seemed to be the documentary's issue. It took itself way too seriously and acted like the guys wrestling in jeans and Papa Roach shirts were legit superstars.
Yourself, John.
My God, this is great. The segment where the two guys explained the metaphors behind the weapons and spots they did had me howling in laughter. Pretentiousness is one thing, but... Wait, I might have to tag out of this one. I'm just laughing too hard. But pseudo-pretentiousness is another altogether. There also is another scene which shows how blatantly doctored the documentary is. At some point, a kid with big black hair takes a flaming table bump and, pardon the pun, proceeds to get grilled by a tough... I'm sorry, Way. I'm going to die here.
You can do it.
Ugh. By a tough-looking bystander who tells him, and I'm paraphrasing here, that he was a fucking idiot. The kid stands there nervously, not looking the guy in the face, and just mumbles to himself. Then suddenly, the camera switches to the literal point of view of the bystander to give the impression of the kid staring the guy in the face and calmly giving his reasons for doing what he did. What the fuck? It's clear as day that they waited for the tough-looking stranger to leave and then filmed the kid's retaliation. Are they that desperate to get these backyarders over? What may be on the mat is that they film the wrestlers in both lights. They can be good, they can be bad, they can be despicable human beings, but they can have heart. A lot of heart. The backyard just punches that in the face and sets up all the backyarders as gods amongst men. I could go on and on about this film. The ridiculous scene where the mother watches her son and the guy he just met on the internet have a match. The principal of a high school hailing the backyarder's Microsoft publisher skills. And when the lizard makes his pro debut in jeans and a t-shirt. And the inclusion of RVD was all for naught. But I'll stop there for the sake of length. I score this documentary 2.5 lizards out of 10. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, we go finally to Addy from New Jersey, who says... You know there are times when I'm thankful to be living in the Northeast. Barring Sandy aside, I've gone to a good college, have been raised by a loving family, and I've had a nurturing environment that's grounded in pragmatism. This documentary actually has made me thankful for such things I take for granted in my life. I don't think I have any right to pity these people in this documentary. They are doing what they enjoy. Realistically, these people have little to no shot at the WWE. What they do have are a handful of moments that they can draw significance and personal glory from while they put themselves through absolute hell. It's likely their sense of accomplishment and pride that keeps them from moving forward. However, they don't have a compass to really navigate them in the direction of their pipe dream. I doubt these people have the internet or resources that would demystify the path ahead. Watching these good-natured, blue-collared people, I don't think they're shielding themselves from reality, but rather they're more naive to the nuances of it. There is some interesting footage in this film. I love the craftiness and the creativity in one scene where a guy describes how he erected a wrestling ring. I'm thinking a lot of the people in the film come from families that do things like carpentry, drywall, ironworking, and other unionized forms of labor, which gives them such skills to implement to everyday life. I've started working as a construction inspector for a bridge, and it's really amazing to see people that aren't necessarily book smart as resourceful and savvy as they are. And that was one thing we didn't comment on when they showed this construction of this backyard ring. It was actually quite impressive. They went through the trouble of, you know, custom building things with certain materials, with things like the sound of the ring in mind, and just pretty complex for somebody just in the backyard. Another wonderful moment that stands out is when this thuggish-looking guy speaks for us at home watching the film. He tries to appeal to the compassion of the young promoter and serves as the voice into what we, the viewers of the documentary, are thinking. As this documentary goes on, it, like backyard wrestling, feels excessive. That being said, I'm glad I watched it, since it's given me a portal into something I rarely fathom. And when it's all said and done, I'm just happy for how far the Lizard has come in his pro wrestling career. From working in a backyard fend under a 17-year-old to now being the current TNA World Champ.
Oh. Now, Wei, that is all of our feedback that we got from our listeners this week, but I understand you have a bonus piece of feedback. The old snail mail way. You got a letter written to you.
I have a letter written to me with postage stamps and handwriting. I almost didn't know how to decipher this.
This is awesome.
Archaic communication. But it is from a listener of ours named Alex from Ottawa, who listened to a podcast of ours from a few weeks ago and heard our discussion about Laser Quest. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Something we almost did in Montreal. There was one right around on St. Catherine Street.
Well, I'm glad we didn't, because Alex here, he writes us a very nice card. He even wrote a whole thing on the card. I'm going to read it right now. Dear John Wei, I'm a huge fan of all your podcasts. Not only do we share the same views on wrestling, I rarely disagree with anything you bring up, but it is uncanny how often I have the same experiences in my day, or read the same news, or see the same videos. Whatever. It adds an extra value to my listening experience. Thank you for all your work, your long hours and patience with wrestling to entertain everyone all week. I wanted to thank you guys for mentioning Laser Quest on the November 3rd review away and calling us the best in the laser tag industry. I agree. The first Laser Quest opened in 1993, and though there are currently 58 locations operating, employing over 850 people in North America. Please check laserquest.com for more info. Anyways, Wei had mentioned that he had never played the world's greatest game, so I felt obligated to get him into a mission and have as much fun playing as I have listening to you guys. So here are 20 free game passes for you to use at any Laser Quest you'd like. I've also sent a list of Laser Quest phone numbers. We recommend calling ahead to make a reservation. Thanks again and enjoy. Alex LaCarle, Assistant Manager of Laser Quest Ottawa. So thank you. We will certainly be...
How are we going to do this?
We're going to play 10 games each, obviously. 20 passes.
Maybe we can make a contest out of this in some form or fashion.
Okay. You mean invite people to play Laser Quest?
No, maybe not. We'll find out. 20 passes. This is crazy.
Maybe we'll invite the Fight Network office here. Maybe we'll do a review away versus live audio wrestling.
And put it on YouTube. Well, that's incredible, Wei. Expires October 18th, 2013.
Yeah,
so
we got a year. We got a year to use up these 20 passes. So thank you, Alex.
I'm very impressed. Snail mail. Yeah. Still the best way to receive information, in my opinion. People, nothing beats getting a letter from somebody.
People take the time to seal an envelope. Deserves to be read.
Anyway, well, thank you, everyone, to your feedback. we always appreciate it very much. And I guess in closing way here, I mean, you watch this documentary, and I think that there's – you cannot deny the passion that a lot of these people have. They are the ultimate wrestling fans that just want to make it. And I think you just watch as a viewer, as someone that if they channeled this same passion into the right direction instead of this direction –
what's the right direction?
I mean, if you are so – if you're willing to do this to get noticed, to get – to make it to the next level – I mean, you would just hope that they would go that route to, you know, go to a wrestling school, try and maybe some of these people, it's just simply, I want to perform in front of my friends and have that spotlight, even as small as it may be in someone's backyard. But I watch this and I just watch these guys that I can't imagine what these people are putting their bodies through at the age of 16 and how they're going to feel at 30 with their bodies just scarred up. Yeah. And
well, You know, this documentary definitely makes it harder for me to watch hardcore wrestling. And I mean hardcore wrestling like a lot of Mick Foley matches, like a lot of ECW matches, a lot of the TL, you know, the Jeff Hardy, Dudley's, Edge and Christian matches. Because they are, they're directly responsible for some of this stuff. And I think you can look at, pro wrestling is just so weird because, I don't think there are, for as popular as MMA is, I don't think there are people, kids out there that are putting on backyard MMA events and filming them for cable access where they just beat the shit out of each other.
There is some underground, like,
sure, there's
stuff
some
going on.
But with pro wrestling, there's the idea that because it's fake, it's not going to hurt. We can do all this, and everybody, you know, you see Mick Foley survive all this, and you see Jeff Hardy do this fall from all that. There's a way to make it look safe and not to come out, to hit a fluorescent light tube over your head and not suffer any injuries. I think that belief makes a lot of people make some really dumb decisions. And you can look at, you know, this whole scene as a negative effect of the popularity of hardcore wrestling.
I think it all depends on what you look for in professional wrestling. For me, one of the things that really sparked my interest in pro wrestling, even at a younger age, was the fact that these people are putting together something in the ring where you are basically emulating violence and trying to get an audience interested in your match, and both guys leave at the end with the impression on the audience that they have killed each other, mm-hmm. and both men are fine to walk off. And that was always kind of the art of pro wrestling. Whereas these guys, it's kind of their kind of idea was, well, we actually hurt each other, and that is our charm, is that you're going to see guys really hurt each other here. Yeah. And it's the other way around, where instead of the two workers in the ring basically dictating to the audience, it's the reverse here, where it's the audience that are watching as these guys try to essentially, they're the ones that are being manipulated by the audience.
Yeah, and like I said, you can, you know, as much as we respect and love these people, you can look at people like Tommy Dreamer and Mick Foley as examples of people who have gotten over because of how much they hurt themselves in you know, for an audience. Granted, there's so much more about the, you know, the people that I just mentioned that made them talents above what, you know, they had to do. But a large aspect of their careers is getting hurt for the enjoyment of an audience. And I think that's what these people, unfortunately, these kids clung on to.
Well, that's going to wrap us up for this week. I want to thank everyone who tuned in this week for our review of The Backyard. And let's look ahead to next week, Wei.
Your choice.
Oh, geez. What are you prepared for?
Anything.
Anything?
Anything.
Because I have one in mind.
Okay.
It was just came into my head as we were reviewing this. We watched this version of the Buried Alive match. I thought we would go to a match that incorporated elements of this documentary. The Survivor Series from 2003, featuring a Buried Alive match between The Undertaker and Vince McMahon, and one of the sickest blade jobs in WWE history.
All right.
And one of my favorite probably my favorite Survivor Series match of all time, also on this show. So are you down to watch this? There is also Bill Goldberg in the main event.
Yeah, I'm absolutely down to watch it. Now it's time to see the pros emulate the amateurs.
And let's see, because there are times, Wei, when the pros sometimes borrow from this mentality. So we will review that next week. The 2003 Survivor Series from Dallas, Texas. Undertaker, Vince, buried alive. So that is coming up next week. In the meantime, you can check out liveaudiowrestling.com daily for updates at Wei0937, a man that is just becoming more and more popular by the day, whether it is on popular radio shows getting his name dropped, whether it is people yelling in the middle of the night on the street about where he is. Wei, you are the great Wei Ting, as Ariel Helwani so eloquently put it.
Why, as other people put it.
Why not? Is what most people would respond. And you can follow me at I Am John Pollock. More shows coming your Wei this week. The MMA Report, Review and Impact, Law, Sunday night, midnight Eastern, TSN 1050 Toronto, The Team 1410. And Wei is furiously searching for a song. Do you have anything, Wei, that can properly cap off this week's review?
Yes, I want to hear, very appropriately for this review, the theme song for the Backyardigans.
The what?
The Backyardigans.
What is the Backyardigans? That's a group?
You'll find out.
Oh, great. I'm not looking forward to this at all, but I can hear it climbing as we get out of here. Goodbye, everybody. We'll chat with you later this week.